this is my weekly podcast, Adventures with Postpartum Depression, a show dedicated to sharing stories and spreading awareness about maternal mood disorders. For show notes and more information, please go to my website, ppdadventures.com. There's also a Facebook page, facebook.com/ppdadventures. And now, on to the show. Hello, adventurers. This is episode 48, which I am recording on Saturday, October 7th, 2017. And I'm recording it even though episode 47 apparently didn't post. I swear, I went through everything and uploaded all the stuff and picked the art and wrote the title and the little blurb, and I'm looking and it's not there. But it's a good, I don't know, irony, coincidence, what have you, because I can never keep those words straight. But it works out well because the theme, the message of episode 47 is it's okay if your best is pathetic. So if you listen to that episode, you already know what I'm talking about. If you haven't, go ahead and listen, because I'm really big on doing your best, but realizing your best might suck. And so there you go, irony. I gave this whole lecture on how your best might suck. And in this case, my best was recording an episode and then sitting on it for like 2 weeks before it uploaded. So some of you might see two episodes go up, boom, boom. Those of you listening in real time, that's what happened. I didn't think I was going to get to record an episode this weekend. It's Saturday, and Nathan is having some man time by himself, but with other men at the racetrack. He loves the horses. He loves the math that goes on, all the analysis. And we live near this really cool racetrack called Santa Anita, and out in Arcadia, which is just east of Pasadena. If you've seen the movie Seabiscuit, they race there a bunch. And I shouldn't be talking so much about racehorses on a show about postpartum depression. But anyway, the whole point is I'm alone with the kids today. So there's just no way I was going to record an episode when I'm alone with the kids. And usually I'm a bit worn out by the end of a day with the kids. So doing those evening recordings, it's touch and go. Episode 47 was an evening recording when Nathan was out of town in Vegas with his best friend, and I was exhausted and actually laying in bed with my eyes closed. I love that I did that, and I hate that that episode hasn't been released as at the time I'm recording this. But c'est la vie. So anyway, but I was planning to have lunch with my sister at our local friendly Coco's, which has gluten-free pancakes, much to my gluten-free sister's delight. And I was rallying the troops, and I had Pippa got out of her pull-up, because yes, sometimes 4.5-year-olds are lazy and they just want to hang out at home in a pull-up. She was needing a lazy day, and Pippa was so excited, we're going to Coco's with Aunt Katie. It's really mostly about Aunt Katie, but a little bit about Coco's. And then Julian took a dump, and man, he was just ready for the nap. You know how babies are, they take that bowel cleansing movement and then they're like, okay, all systems go, we are ready to shut down for a 3-hour nap. At least my child. Pippa never actually took 3-hour naps. She did maybe a half dozen times, and you were always poking her to make sure she was alive. Julian is the king of the 3-hour nap. A 2-hour nap will do it, but he will seem a little sleepy the rest of the day. 3-hour nap is what we're looking for. And he can take a 3-hour nap, wake up at 6:30 if he takes a late one, and go to bed 7:30. I don't hate me because my child's a good sleeper. I did nothing right. Pippa was a crap napper. So anyway, Julian, I had to put him down. I called my sister. She was already on the way over, and she decided to take my Pippa on her own. So I'm not recording this with my good microphone because that is in the trunk of my car, because I thought I was going to use it at my parents' house this week. I didn't. Sorry. But they are off, and this is the first time my sister has gone solo with Pippa, or either of my children, or any of her nieces and nephew. She's got 3 nieces, 1 nephew. And this is exciting. I think it's going to go really well. I think they're going to have a lot of fun. And I'm already daydreaming about years to come where my sister is wanting to, like, kidnap the kids all weekend. I'm like, oh, no, well, okay, I guess you can. I mean, oh, it's going to be awesome. So long as this whole Coco's endeavor goes well. So I've got one kid napping, another kid off on a Coco's adventure, a carb sponsored adventure with her aunt, and here I am. And I want to talk about therapy. I should have mentioned that in my back from summer hiatus episode, because therapy, I ended therapy over the summer. It happened, so now it's October, right now, today, and I ended therapy at the end of June. And it was actually more early June when I told my therapist I wanted to end therapy. And it was something I had been thinking about for a couple of months. And it was really the right thing to do. When I ended therapy, there was... Let me give a history. Shall I give my history of therapy? Okay. So the first time I ever did therapy, I was a senior in college. And I had a huge prejudice, or I don't know, against therapy. Like, I did not think well of people who needed to do therapy. I thought therapy is for losers or weaklings, people who can't just, like, get their shit together. But I had, I guess, like, hypochondria. I had anxiety that developed when I was in college, and this is all in my memoir. Oh, should I do a side note? My memoir, I actually sent 2 weeks ago, I think. Yeah, 2 weeks ago to my editor for her to give a final, like big dig and review to. And she's getting it back to me in about a month, early November. So, fingers crossed, I'll get those revisions. And hopefully I don't just, like, I mean, maybe I'll, like, dig a hole and hide for a couple of days. But then after that, hopefully I can get the revisions done and just be happy with the book and ready to release it to the world. I really would love to do this in early 2008. So, more about, like, the anxiety and hypochondria is in that book. But long story short, this doctor recommended I give therapy a shot because I was going to the student medical center way too often and for just, like cold symptoms and for a spider bite. And so he suggested it, and I was like, well, this is good for my health, and I want to, like, it's obviously going, some notation must be happening in my chart, so I'm, like, too embarrassed to keep going to the student center, so I better go see the therapist. And our college student insurance plan, you got 10 free, quote-unquote free, I mean, you were paying for the insurance, but 10 sessions, and I resolved, and I'm like, okay, I got to, like, resolve all of my issues in 10 sessions or less. Because my parents to have to pay for it because they were already paying for enough, what with me going to college across the country, or if I was embarrassed and didn't want to even tell my parents it was something I needed. But so I didn't want my parents to have to pay. I can't remember if I told them at the time I was doing therapy. I should ask them. And I didn't want to have to pay. Like, I had money from working as a summer camp counselor, and I just was like, I'm not spending my hard-earned dollars on such bullshit as therapy. So I resolved, quote-unquote, my issues within, I think it was like 7 sessions, and I congratulated myself on being an overachiever and getting it done before the 10. And I decided all of my anxiety was resolved and handled. And how many more times am I going to say the word resolved in this episode? But anyway, I marched off from the dormitory, went back to my dormitory from the student medical center that last time, went back to work on my thesis on the publication of Benjamin Franklin's autobiography. If you ever have insomnia, let me know, and I will send you a copy of it. And I just, all I had learned was how to hide my anxiety from the world so that no one would make such an awful suggestion as that I needed therapy again. Well, fast forward through law school in the first couple years of being a lawyer, and I was miserable and hating my job, and I was also had a non-existent, no, I had a slightly existent love life, I would say, like, whatever the equivalent of, like, whatever the lowest heartbeat you can have and still have a heartbeat, that was my love life. And, but it was really just, like, occasionally dabbling with online dating and going maybe on a first date and then being appalled and hiding from the world of dating again for several months until I was like, oh, okay, let me try again. So I tried all the sites, and I thought, okay, my two loved ones actually suggested maybe you should see a therapist because you're so miserable at work and you're really unhappy about your dating struggles. And it was like, well, okay. So it just sort of seemed, I wasn't really excited about it, but I was also sort of curious. And so I did therapy for a couple of years. And before I met Nathan, once we started dating, then I ended that therapy and then came back to it like a year later. And just to resolve more work crap. And I remember I did a couple months of sessions and then was like, well, I guess I hate being a lawyer, but I'm just not ready to do anything about it. And that was what I got out of therapy that time around. And I feel like I need to like dig into that therapy because not dig in. I had so many issues that I sort of skated on the surface of, or I really think of therapy in terms of like the ocean. Like my issues are an ocean. And the first time I did therapy, I'm distracted. I'll be right back. Okay, sorry about that. I'm back. I could hear my washing machine being an asshole in the next room and beeping. And I didn't know if the sound was going to get picked up on the recording here or not, but probably not because I don't have my fancy schmancy mic. But I thought it was like annoying enough that like every 40 seconds I'd hear it and I'd be like, God damn the washing machine. God damn the washing machine. Our washing machine is as old as Pippa, or 2 weeks younger. Like it broke, no, like a week younger than Pippa, because it broke during Nathan's paternity leave and he had to go out and buy the washing machine. And I remember, I look back at that as a red flag because yes, I was exhausted from childbirth and nursing and all those hormonal crashes. And I was descending into postpartum depression when our old washing machine broke. But I was just like, I can't look at washing machines and I can't, even think about looking at a review, and this is just overwhelming. And I was just like, had such a extreme reaction to it that was a red flag. So this is our new washing machine that Nathan chose from Sears. And I feel like a washing machine should just be able to work for 10 years. Yeah, it does a lot of work for us. We do a lot of laundry. There's a lot of like, kids messing up their clothes and having pee pee accidents and spilling, a cup of milk on mommy. So like, yeah, it gets a lot of use, but I just feel like 4.5 years is not long enough for a washing machine. But it's been so bitchy lately, and just like, it doesn't matter if it's a full load or a tiny load or a medium load, it'll just start beeping and being like, I can't spin cycle anymore. It's all center. And you like move the laundry around and you like strategically try to like change the weight. And it's like, I can't handle this. So you have to like turn off the power and restart and do a brand new load. And this is like now happening at least twice a week. And I'm not going to let this give me a nervous breakdown, but I really just like shit. I just don't feel like having this on my to-do list. So okay, so that's where I was, and I was talking about therapy as an ocean. My first time venturing into therapy in college, I feel like I literally put my feet in the ocean far enough for like a little bit of wave to splash up against my ankles, and that was it. Like that was as far as I went. With my second round of therapy, I got in to the water and was like snorkeling, but that was it, snorkeling. I wasn't willing to put on any like deep sea diving gear. I wasn't taking scuba lessons. I was certainly not going anywhere where there might be sharks or barracuda or anything more treacherous than a clownfish. It was useful. It was more, I mean, even just splashing the ankles in that first round of therapy, that at least got me kind of aware of stuff, and it didn't help me resolve issues before I had postpartum depression, but then in hindsight, it helped me understand more what was going on. So I don't know. So I think my second round of therapy was helpful, but I was again mainly addressing the symptoms of my anxiety and not really digging into the anxiety. My third round of therapy was with a cognitive behavioral psychologist after I was diagnosed with postpartum depression, after I spent 4 nights in the hospital, and we would meet every week, and that lasted from early August until early February. So what's that? August, September, October, November, December, January. 7 months. Okay. I thought it was 7 months, but I never trust myself on these things. So it was 7 months of weekly therapy, but with weeks off. We went to Nebraska. I took time off for Christmas. So it was probably more like 6 months of cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT. And that was some deep sea diving, folks. And that was, I think, really critical to my recovery. We dismantled my OCD rituals that developed during my first four months postpartum. We dug into reasons why I was anxious. I recognized that I had been anxious all my life, and or not all my life, but since all my adult life since college, and we came up with strategies and basically rewired my brain. We also dug into a lot of my feelings about having postpartum depression. I wasn't prepared to do that in the first or even the second session. It took about 6 weeks for me to be ready to actually look back and say, I had dark thoughts. I had thoughts of throwing Pippa. I had thoughts of wanting to end my life or be put into a coma, which is effectively ending your life. And I wasn't able to look at those for about 6 weeks. And then looking at them, it was really essential to my recovery to actually confront what had happened. It was like there was a pressure building up in me, and we just had to let off the pressure. And I think to this day, I still have to let off pressure about those things. I had a couple of bad nights of sleep this past week. The weather here, we had a bit of like a cold spell, you know, like 70 or like 68. And then we went back into like 95. And I don't know if you can hear, I have like a touch of nasal congested. It could be congestion. It could be allergies. It could be the kids. I don't know, but it's hard to keep track. But whatever reason, I had a couple of nights where I would just be up for like an hour or two in the middle of the night and would just wake up the next morning not feeling well rested. And I knew on a rational level, like, this isn't depression or anxiety related. This is just, you know, the weird temperatures in the house and, or who knows, or me just being a little under the weather and maybe Nathan under the weather. Maybe he snored a little louder than ever and woke me. Who knows? So I, though, immediately go to, oh my God, is this insomnia? Is this like going to be like when I had postpartum depression? Is this going to be 5 weeks of insomnia? So I was doing that in my head Thursday when I was up during the night for an hour. But then I ran into a mom at Pippa's preschool who I know also dealt with postpartum anxiety. And she's been struggling with anxiety for various reasons lately. And we connected in the parking lot for just a couple of minutes. And it felt so good to be like, to tell her, it felt like a confession. Like, my mind just immediately goes to this mental health aspect, even though I'm doing great. As soon as I have an hour of insomnia on one night, I'm thinking, no one else has these issues. No one else has trouble sleeping. This is my hormones doing some sort of, you know, weird crash. And I need to figure, you know, I probably should, you know, like, just going to worst case scenario. And she was saying, yeah, she, you know, it's just a tendency, I think, to overanalyze, to be like really sensitive. And I guess it's better to be sensitive to something like insomnia, since sleep is so crucial. I should be staying on top of this and making sure I'm getting my sleep. But it also sucks that it's like, I can't just be awake for an hour during the night sometimes. So that's annoying. But it's nice that my CBT psychologist and I worked through a lot of my fears about having postpartum depression. So I don't often jump to that worst case scenario, like that this is a relapse or just a new like perimenopause reoccurrence. I understand that there's these feelings in me, and this was an experience, and it's almost like it sends off waves, reverberations, vibrations into the, you know, into my personal universe, and they've lost their strength and their velocity, and they don't come as often. But it's like there's this big moment in my life, and I'm just not going to ever be able to erase that from my soul. And that's okay, because I learned so much from it. And so every now and then, yeah, I'm going to have trouble sleeping for an hour at night because I have allergies or congestion or what have you, and I'm going to have to like address the fact, like, oh, yeah, postpartum depression. I'm allowed to get a little nervous about that, but that doesn't mean that every time I lose an hour's sleep, it doesn't mean I'm like having a mental health crisis. So I didn't even think I was going to talk about that when I started this episode. I love doing these episodes because, and when I write, certain things come up, and when I talk to you guys, other things come up. And I can't plot these episodes from start to finish. I write little notes sometimes. I don't have notes today. All I have is end of therapy. And here I am, and I haven't even talked about the therapy I ended yet. But I give myself these little topics, maybe a couple plot points. And it's really like, okay, let's drive from New York to Los Angeles. But I have no idea if we're going to be traveling through the Colorado Rockies, or if we're going to hit the Alamo, or if we're going to have a major detour through, you know, Canada and try to go see some moose. So they have moose in Canada, right? Yeah, they must. They have them in New Hampshire and Vermont, where I went to college, but they must have them in Canada. They just seem so Canadian. Okay, so therapy. So CBT was a really, really great experience, and deep sea diving. But at some point I ended that because, well, I know the point I ended it. But okay, so at that, I ended it after the 7 months because I was resenting it. I got to this point where I went on Saturdays, and where I went from being like, this is my cherished time of the week, I look forward to this, to I'm resenting this, you know, intrusion into my time. And I would try to go, if I tried to go during the week and use a babysitter for Pippa, I would resent the fact that I was wasting babysitter time on therapy. So I ended that therapy, and I didn't do therapy again until I was about 3.5 months postpartum with Julian. And I had, we started treating me for Zoloft immediately after I gave birth with Julian, but around the 3 month mark, I just suddenly had insomnia and like physical anxiety that wasn't tied to anything specific. And I, you know, talked with my psychiatrist over the phone as soon as I realized what was happening, and she bumped up my Zoloft dose, and we switched me. I'd been taking Buspar when I was pregnant, and we switched me back to mirtazapine, also known as Remeron, because that had worked, helped with my insomnia my first go around. And like, I slept beautifully that night, and that was the end of ever feeling postpartum symptoms for me. So, but after, you know, a couple weeks later, I went in for my regular appointment with my psychiatrist, and we were talking about it, and just, I was like, you know, I just have this feeling that I need to see, talk to a therapist again. It just feels like it would be a good way to stay on top of my feelings, because this is a big challenging year, and it just feels like the thing to do. And she was like, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. And she recommended someone, and we clicked right away, and we saw each other every week for not quite a year and a half. So from February of 2016 until June 2017. And for a while, it felt like I'm going to be in therapy with this therapist so long as this therapist is a therapist and I'm living in this part of the world. I will make this work. And it was a goal of mine. I'm like, I want to be, when I start making money with my writing, I want to make enough money so that I can cover my therapy and babysitting, any babysitting expenses, because I just want to be able to like own this. But then it got to this, I did a lot of journaling. And I got in the habit, for a while I was handwriting my journal, and then I was typing it, and I was sending it to my therapist. And she was reading through it, but she wasn't getting it until, like, she wouldn't read it until, like, I would usually send it to her the day we had therapy. So she would read it, but we wouldn't be able to talk about it until the next week. Like, she wouldn't read it until after our session. And so at our next session, she'd be like, I wanted to mention, and she'd be reading things out loud from my journal. And I'd be like, I have no memory of writing this. Or, oh yeah, I wrote about that. It's just not an issue anymore. And she would want to talk about it. Like, you wrote blah, 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 so let's talk about blah, blah, blah. And I'd be like, it's just not, I don't even identify with that anymore. So I can, like, all I'm doing is trying to remember how I felt and sort of projecting myself back into, like, a person who existed 2 or 3 weeks ago. It's just incredible how quickly we change. I guess the benefit of having that experience, and I'm realizing this now as I'm talking to you guys, thank you for listening. I guess the benefit of that experience was that I could see how quickly I changed and how quickly I cycled through issues, how something that kind of cropped up just felt like, like, this is it, this is the end of everything. Like, you know, just like a blip with a friend or with my mom or with Nathan or whoever, you know, the important people in my life. And then it would be nothing. Or it wouldn't be about some person. It would just be like, you know, the intense feelings of like insecurity or a parenting issue. Parenting issues came up a lot. And it was just like, I guess seeing how quickly I these issues became non-issues was helping me see how effective my own journaling was, because these were things that weren't coming up through talk therapy on my weekly basis. They only came up because my therapist was seeing my journaling pages. But then I started to feel like this is a waste. Like, I really don't need my journalist doing a poetry reading, my therapist doing a poetry reading to me from my journal entries. It feels a little, it just felt unproductive. And I lost that productive feeling. So for like a year, every week I'd go in and we would be talking and I would leave and I would have that feeling like I just did some real work. I got through something. And, you know, I feel like every 5 or 6 weeks I'd leave and be like, meh. But most of the time I was like, yes, I just figured shit out. And she would be like, my therapist would ask questions or give me homework assignments and really cool stuff, like, you know, drawing a self-portrait or making a vision board and just stuff that I like wouldn't have thought to do on my own, but then to have my therapist give it as an assignment was great. But I lost that feeling, and I kept going. And then I had this feeling of, I want to end therapy, but I feel really bad that I'm going to hurt my therapist's feelings. And now, so when I told my therapist I wanted to end therapy, but I felt bad about hurting her feelings, I told her. She wanted, of course, to work through that issue. And that became, and that was like, you shouldn't be worried. It was like that she wanted to assure me that the relationship with therapist patient was there, and she wasn't going to like take that away from me just because I decided I needed a break. But it also, at the time that she brought it up, felt like, oh, am I supposed to like stay in therapy now so that we can talk through my feelings about feeling bad about hurting my therapist's feelings? You know, therapy started to feel like I was writing every day, and I'm still writing pretty much every day, and I was working through my shit. And this is what happened with my CBT psychologist. I was doing homework assignments and working through shit. And then by the end of the week, I would come to him and I would tell him what I had written about and what I had done, what had been an issue during the week and how I had resolved the issue. And he would be like, you did that right. And it was really like getting approval. And that's what I felt like with my latest therapist. It was like, it felt like I was sort of being like, these are my achievements, these are my victories. And, you know, there's something pleasant about getting that yay, hooray, but there's also to me something almost regressive about it. Like, I don't want to live in a bubble and be like, I don't need other, I'm not wanting to worry about other people. I don't know. I'm thinking through this. It's like, I want to feel connected with people. I want these real connections, but those connections come from me being my authentic self, regardless of whether someone else is going to approve of that or not. And there's just, I don't know. It just, therapy wasn't doing anything for me. So that's why I decided to end it in June. And it was weird. I had a bad session with my therapist where I was like crying and I was angry at her because I had told her the night before that I had a sore throat that was getting worse and worse, and I didn't think I could see her the next day. And she told me, like, well, I have this, like, 48-hour cancellation policy, so I'm afraid I'm going to have to charge you. And I was, like, really upset. I was like, well, if you're going to charge me, then I might as well come in. And, you know, I was just angry. It's like, I feel like this is a betrayal, that this is, you know, it's just that this is all about money. And she's like, no, it's not. I'm like, but it is. I mean, you told me you were going to charge me. And so we worked through it a lot, and she agreed, and she offered to actually not charge me for the next week's session. It's like, no, like, that doesn't feel right. That feels like me trying to take advantage of you. But I don't know, there's something about the therapy relationship where you're paying for someone, a professional's time, which is valuable. But I think that means you should be, they should be helping you do some work. It shouldn't, our therapy relationship had sort of gotten to this situation where it was like a standing lunch date. And I mean, it wasn't that, it was before lunch, but you know what I mean. So, like, okay, once a week, I'm going to see my therapist, and I'm going to have time to, like, talk about myself. But I didn't need that. And I was just at a place where I didn't need someone to help me figure out my issues. And it's just, I'm saying all this to be like, I think I'm the sort of person who's going to do therapy several more times during her life. I think that's me. But I think I'm not going to be doing therapy uninterrupted. I think therapy is one of my many tools. Writing's a tool. Podcasting's a tool. You know, life just, sometimes you learn through therapy, and sometimes, like, I'm really trying to learn how to sew right now and work my sewing machine, and that can be really frustrating because it's not something that comes naturally to me, and I'm actually learning a lot about myself and how I manage my frustrations just for doing that, and what parts of sewing make me happy, and what parts, well, none of them drain me, but there's this frustration, and I'm learning more from sewing than I was during my last couple of months of therapy. So, like, right now what I need to do is sewing. And I don't know what the next thing's going to be. And I talked about this in, like, my last couple sessions with my therapist. I was like, I don't know how long a break I need. I may need literally a one-week break. I didn't. Like, it's been a few months now. Like, I didn't need 1 week break. But I was like, I don't know. Like, it's just unknown. And it felt like part of the reason I needed to end therapy. Partly it was because therapy just wasn't giving me that, like, satisfied, like, yes, I just accomplished something goal. And, you know, and that's not to say life is all about your accomplishments. It's not. Who you are is more than your to-do list. It's more about it's more than what you've done. It's not about, like, your accolades and your achievements. And yet at the same time, you know, time is limited. And so if you're spending an hour being like, oh yeah, I'm doing great. Like, wow, my life is so good. Oh, yeah, I'm not feeling anxious. Oh, no, I've been sleeping great. I mean, like, an hour of doing that, it's like, if I could go in for a 5-minute mini boost session, like, even a Skype session with my therapist once a month, like, maybe that would be worthwhile for me. But I didn't need to spend 50 minutes a week jerking off verbally to my accomplishments. I'm going to have more issues. I'm going to. I'm human. That's just what life does. I'm going to have loved ones who are older than me who are going to die before me, and it's going to suck. And I might need therapy for that. Then again, I might not. But other things are going to happen in my life. I'm going to have menopause. I'm going to have perimenopause. I'm going to end menopause and be on the other side. I might need therapy to work through those issues. I have children. They're going to be teenagers. They're going to leave the nest. They're going to also be adolescent. They're going to do all these things. And maybe I'll need therapy to talk through that stuff. And I did talk through a lot of parenting stuff with my therapist. And a lot of that had to do more with, like, my comfort level and it may have been a way of addressing my perfectionism or my need for approval. I don't know what issues I could. I mean, if I really thought about it, I could figure this out. But I talked a lot about my parenting, and I was getting a lot of reassurance from my therapist because she also works with kids, and she would be like, oh, well, this is very, like, developmentally appropriate for Pippa or for Julian or what have you. And yes, this is a very universal reaction for parents to feel like, you know, when their kids are being defiant, for parents to feel aggravated. But I realized that I'm like, well, I might as well just be talking to my peers, to my friends of, you know, preschool parents or the Julian's baby classes parents. He's not a baby anymore. He's a toddler. Oh my gosh, he's such a kid. But you know what I mean. So I just felt like therapy had become redundant, and I know that I've been kicking ass lately, and that when I'm not kicking ass, I just need to let myself not kick ass for a bit, and then I'm going to get, like, through it, and I'm going to feel a lot better. So that was a big reason. I don't need this valid for ending therapy. I don't need validation. I am an approval junkie recoverer. I really, most of my life, before my anxiety, I craved approval from my parents, from teachers, from peers. I wanted it from everyone, and you can't get everyone's approval. You can't. Everyone is different. Everyone has different agendas, and you're going to drive yourself batshit crazy because, you know, your teacher's wanting you to be quiet and cooperative and raise your hand and get good grades, and the crazy classmate sitting behind you wants you to help him cheat on the test, and he wants to tell you stupid knock-knock jokes, and he wants you to laugh in the middle of class even if that annoys the teacher. So, like, right there, third grade, you cannot possibly make Mrs. Talt and, like, Eric, the, you know, class clown, you can't make them happy at the same time. Not that I'm speaking from personal experience. You can't make everyone happy. And so I was in, by being an approval junkie most of my life, I put myself in a position of, like, guaranteed misery, because I was going to be pissing someone off, and I was going to be feeling bad about that. And that doesn't mean that you should, like, be an asshole and cut everyone off on the freeway and, you know, steal. Like, I'm not saying that. But if you are really into using your stroller, and there's an attachment parent out there who's, like, rolling their eyes because you should be wearing your baby, like, it doesn't, that's their issue, that's their problem, and, like, push your kid around your stroller. Like, you know it works for you. And so, like, I've really embraced that, and having a therapist who was approving the way I was living my life, approving the way I was writing and working through my issues, approving the way I was approaching parenting challenges, that was just, like, feeding into my approval junkieism. Like, and that's something I've put to rest. And the therapist, by being in therapy, it was threatening to undo the work I did. Because so long as I am living for even just one person's approval, as far as I'm concerned, I'm an approval junkie. And I'm ready to, like, regress and be back in the station where I am seeking absolutely everyone's approval. I love people. I try to be nice to my husband. I mean, I sent him off to the racetrack today he goes to this seminar sometimes that this, like, racing expert who's written all these books does. And, you know, I'm glad that he's doing that. So it's not like I'm a psycho selfish bitch, but I'm also not seeking his approval. I'm not, like, texting him every 20 minutes and be like, okay, I just did this. Or, you know, I didn't, like, call him and be like, oh my God, should I, like, my sister take Pippa out to lunch? Is that okay? Like, I'm like, of course it's okay. I know it's okay. And he's going to trust my judgment on this. I don't need his approval for everything I do. I do good, loving things for him because I love him and I want him to be happy. And it makes me happy to see him happy. But at the same time, I don't feel miserable when he maybe, it's not so much that he disapproves, just that he would handle a situation in life differently from me. So that was a main reason also for me ending therapy. But the biggest reason of all, main reason I ended therapy was because my gut was telling me to. Gut, intuition, but I think my intuition really originates from my gut. And I have a couple of books on my Amazon wish list, and I'm tempted to actually just, like, hit pause on this recording again and go order them, that are about the brain-stomach connection and how the stomach is basically like a human's second brain, and how serotonin is produced in our gut, and I think more than in our brain. I need to learn about this. This is clearly relevant to some of my stronger interests. I'm interested in everything. Like, even fly fishing sounds kind of interesting. I've never done it, but, like, if any of you want to invite me out to Vermont to go fly fishing, that sounds actually really cool. I'm interested in most things. Like, I'm trying to think of something I'm not interested in. I mean, I'm not interested in learning how to fire a machine gun or something like that. Like, there's things I'm not interested in. But anyway, I digress. What the hell was I talking about? Oh my gosh. Okay. The gut. The gut, it has neurotransmitters. It creates serotonin. The gut has a lot going on down there, and I need to learn more about it, because I read something somewhere about, in the book Goddesses Never Age, about how our gut has more neurotransmitters than our brain. I'm like, okay, I clearly need to know something about this, because my intuition really, I can feel it coming from my gut, not my head. When I'm having, like, when I stop and listen to myself, the thought or the idea does not come from the head, it comes from my stomach. And I just kept feeling from my stomach, like, week after week after week, end therapy. I would be emailing my therapist my latest journal pages, and my stomach would say, end therapy. I'd be walking into therapy, my stomach would go, end therapy. I'd be in therapy, my stomach would say, end therapy. I'd be leaving and feeling kind of, like, deflated, like I just wasted over an hour of my life. Because therapy wasn't just the 45, 50 minutes of therapy. It was the time it took, like, it's not in my house. So I had to drive somewhere. I had to park somewhere. And then, like, I would usually write and have lunch around there, but it was still, like, I was stuck going to the same place every week. And so it was more than an hour of my time every week, and I would be leaving feeling like I just did nothing that was even helpful to me, and my gut would say, "End therapy, not my brain, not my heart, not my tushy, not my feet, my gut. End therapy," and it just kept coming up. And I would sit down to write in my journals in the morning or the end of the day. I journal whenever I can. I've had phases where I'm setting my alarm and making sure I'm up earlier than the kids. But you know what? I just got to get my sleep when I can get my sleep. So sometimes if I have to write at the end of the day or during a nap time or, you know, who knows when, that's when I do it. But every time I was sitting down to write, I'd be like, I'm going to write about this thing that happened yesterday or this idea I have. And then suddenly I'd be writing about, I need to end therapy. I'm really sick of therapy. And I would just like write for 20 minutes, like just variations on the sentence, I want to end therapy. And then all the reasons. And so finally it was like, okay, I clearly need to end therapy just for the sake of honoring my intuition and honoring what my gut is saying. Because when I told my therapist I wanted to end therapy and she wanted to talk about that. And something she brought up was that she felt like she needed to give herself the gift of weekly therapy, that was something she was giving herself. And I wanted to be like, well, that's you, and that's what works for you. And it's also like, I give gifts, like I got defensive, like in the session. I don't even know if I was like, if it was more just inside and my muscles tightening and I didn't like articulate it very well. But I remember feeling like, ugh, well, what worked, like it felt like almost like, it felt, like, I don't think she was trying to make me feel bad, but it felt like it was like, oh, if, you know, her saying, again, it's never about you. It's just, but she says, I like to give myself the gift of therapy. To me, it sounded like the converse. You are depriving yourself of the gift of therapy. You have decided you are not worthy of the gift of therapy. And it was like, no, I have decided I am worthy of listening to my intuition. I am worthy of giving myself the gift of more than an hour a week to do with my time. And you could say, I felt like I was not, I mean, therapy was expensive. It cost $235 bucks a week, okay? That's not cheap. It was when I needed it, and I did a lot of work with it, and for a year, it was over a year, it was extremely valuable, and I can't talk about it in one episode, or even in an intentional episode, all the things I learned, because I just learned, I worked on so many different components of myself and my confidence and getting in touch with my intuition. So it's like, okay, here I am. I've gotten really in touch with my intuition. I've gotten really in touch with like who I want to be as a person, like even more than I did when I had CBT. I feel like I know who I am. And I also know how much I don't know who I am. And I'm open to not knowing everything about me. And I'm open to not having every moment of my future planned. And I'm open to like listening to myself and like letting my adventures develop. So the year plus the therapy did so much for me and was worth way more than $235 a week. But once it wasn't doing anything for me, it was certainly not worth $235 a week for the equivalent of having coffee with a nice friend who's going to say, oh yeah, you're so great, you're wonderful. Like, I can just do that for free with a friend. And I could even buy them a coffee, and it's a hell of a lot cheaper than paying a psychologist. So I felt like, you know, oh, well, I give myself the gift of therapy every week. That sounds like my converse is saying, well, I'm not worthy of spending that money. But instead it was, no, I am worthy of having that money back in my life. And I should talk about money in future episodes, because money is just, for me, I have so many feelings wrapped up in money. But anyway, it was like, no, I am worthy of taking that money and reclaiming it and not necessarily using all. I mean, like, I feel cool about it. Like, some weeks I think about the money I've spent and I'm like, but I didn't spend $235 on therapy. So like this $40 massage I got myself and, you know, or, and this like $15 worth of drinks at Starbucks, I'm out, you know, I'm ahead like $190 bucks. Or, you know, please don't double check my math on that one. So, and my therapist then wanted me to talk about the reasons. And we just kept going almost in circles. I'm like, because my gut is telling me. It's like, well, why? And it's like, you know, I can come up with reasons about how, because I'm an approval junkie, because I've really worked through my current crop of shit and I just need to live for a while and then see what comes up next for like whatever my next stage of growth is. But at the end of the day, trying to articulate reasons just felt wrong, because sometimes your intuition, you don't need to justify it, you don't need to rationalize it, you don't need to come up with like an outline of like support for it, you don't need to like produce evidence. This isn't a law of court, it's your gut, it's your life. And if your gut is telling you end therapy, you end therapy. And if you say, okay, gut, you want me to end therapy, and your gut's like, yes, end therapy, then you might say, like, okay, well, for how long? I need some sort of, like idea, like some timeline. And I would ask my gut, and my gut would be like, I don't know. I'm like, this is how I talk to my gut. Sometimes it just sort of drifts up to me. It originates in the gut. Like last Thursday, which was all of 2 days ago, I had my babysitter, and I was at preschool with Pippa, and I was there for like an hour for boring reasons. It was fun, but it was, the reasons do not justify. I've now taken more time on this podcast than I should have for that. Anyway, I was in the car. I was thinking, what should I do next? And this thought originated in my gut and drifted up, and it was, go to the Huntington, which are these beautiful gardens in Pasadena. Go to the Huntington and take a walk. And I was like, oh, okay, that's what I'm going to do now. And that's what I did. And I had like a great, and I walked over 5 miles on Thursday and like felt really good and inspired from the walk. And I didn't question my gut, and it just sort of, it came up. And it was like, I didn't even have to like, I wasn't even that actively thinking about what am I going to do. It was just, I got in the car and my gut went, let's go to the Huntington. So that was nice. But sometimes I will be journaling and I will actually write down a question. Like, I type it. I'm using the Mac Pages little program, and I will just write, like, to this morning. I was up before everyone, so I wrote, what should I do today? And I closed my eyes, and immediately the word just came up from my stomach, rest. And I paused. I was like, okay. And I asked, I typed again, what should I do today? And then, you know, I took a few breaths, and just the word relax came up again. I was like, okay. Well, like, this is what I'm doing today. And it is what I'm doing today. I mean, I'm doing this podcast, but this is very energizing. And for the most part, I've been resting today, sitting on the couch with one or both children cuddling with me. And even though Pippa's, like, out on an adventure right now with my sister, she clearly needs lots of cuddles and attention today. We all had big weeks, did lots of stuff. There was gymnastics and swim lessons, and Pippa had started ballet again. And it just seemed like, you know, it's time to, like, you can't go, 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 or we can't go, go, go all the time. And it was cool because and I have a spa day planned for tomorrow. And again, it costs, I was actually, like, getting a little anxious about the price of a massage that I booked. And then I realized, oh, that's cheaper than therapy. And I don't do this often. Beautiful. So, you know, zero weird feelings about that. And I was like, as my stomach was drifting up the idea of rest, relax, I was thinking, this is perfect. I'm watching the kids today. It's 95 degrees in Pasadena, so it's not like we want to be tramping around outside. We can't go to the playground. Our flesh will sizzle off if we come in contact with the slide. And don't even get me started on the swings with, like, the metal. Oh, no. We can't go to the playground. We really have no choice but to take it easy today. And yet, there's my intuition saying, take it easy. Take rest. And yay, you scheduled a spa day. And so that's something I really love doing. Checking in with my intuition. And that's what my intuition kept saying. And therapy. It never gave me a timeline. I asked. It didn't have a timeline. And I guess part of it was, and I sensed it was, I need to make this leap of faith to end therapy and know that things are going to work out. And I'm not, this whole episode, I should have prefaced with the idea, I'm not telling anyone out there to end therapy. My God, that is not my message. If you are doing therapy and you are working through some shit, hallelujah. God bless you. Keep up the good work. And, you know, well done for giving yourself something you need. I wish every mom could get some sort of therapy postpartum. If only, like, one session just to touch base, and then, like, another one in 3 months and another one, you know, just to, like, be like, how are you doing? But, so I'm not telling anyone to be like, oh my God, look, like, I quit therapy because even though I've done it now with 4 different therapists, I've decided it doesn't work. Like, no, I think therapy is amazing. And I think some of you, and I think it is, and for some of you, it's never going to work. I'm sorry. For some people, therapy probably doesn't work. And for some of you, you're going to do it every week or twice a week or 3 times a week or every day for the rest of your life. And if that is what's working for you and you can do it, amen. Me, it just, my intuition was like, end therapy. It's time. And I asked for how long, and I talked about it with my therapist, and she's like, well, you can come back anytime. And I always find a slot with my other patients. And I was like, yes. But if your slots don't work for me and my schedule, I guess I can always find another therapist. Since my therapist said, like, yes, and maybe you actually will want another therapist. Maybe you'll be ready to learn different things from a different person. And that felt actually really good to have her acknowledge that like, because it was something I was kind of thinking, but not really thinking through. It was just sort of like a thought lurking in the back of my head that I hadn't really looked at, like, full on, of maybe I'm done with this therapist. And my next round of therapy might be a year away. It might be 10 years away. I don't know. It might be next. It may be tomorrow. I may seriously wake up tomorrow and be like, oh my God, I need to go back to therapy. And I don't know. And it was, I feel like part of it was end therapy because you don't need it right now. And the other part's like end therapy. There's a lot of parts to this, but there's another part that's like end therapy to embrace the adventure of not knowing who your next therapist will be, what day of the week, or how you'll make the time to see them. You won't know who it is. You don't know when you're going to need it. It's time. So I think that's enough for this week. I ended therapy a few months ago, and I was ready to talk about it. And I'm also ready to upload poor episode 47 that's just I thought was out there but is not out there. So apologies to listeners out there that I've just been, like, hanging on to an episode that I thought I already gave you. And I guess, yeah, if therapy's working for you, keep doing it. If it's something you've wanted to do, I would strongly encourage you to make it, to see if you can make it work. And if you're doing therapy and it hasn't been working for you, you can think about ending it. You're not a bad person for ending it. You're allowed to end therapy when you've gotten through that stage of life. And the end of therapy at any time does not mean the end of therapy for the rest of your life. You're allowed to keep coming back and forth because certain things work for you at different times. And I think the gift I really learned from this round of therapy, I mean, there were many gifts, but above all was listen to my intuition. And I know, like, some days I write down, I literally sit down and I open my journal and I write the date and then I say, do I need to go back to therapy? And I sit and think, and every day my gut says no. So I know I don't have to go back to therapy yet, but I also know I'm going to keep touching base with myself and be like, do I need to go back? Do I need to go back? And then also ask myself more open questions like, what do I need? And sometimes it's, you need rest. And sometimes it's, you need Zumba. And sometimes it's, you need to stop talking so people can finish their commute and go to work. So, and this podcast already. So that's what I'm going to do right now. I'm going to listen to I'm going to listen to my intuition and I'm going to say goodbye. And I'm going to remind you that postpartum depression is really, really common. It's at least 1 out of 5 moms who are getting some sort of maternal mental illness. And yet it feels incredibly lonely and isolating. You are not alone. You can and will make a full recovery, and you deserve and should get yourself all of the help from professionals that you can. I love you, and I hope you have a wonderful week.